And I think this is your second time round, is it, Marg, of doing it?
It's my second time round, and this.
So second time round, and Ian, this will be, he's done it twice before. I think Stephen's done it once before, and so it's good to have a completely newcomer. And you've actually come on, a good week, actually, Sophia, because it's class five, and this now looks at all the four immeasurable attitudes. So this was called Facing Uncertain Times: Practices for Calm, Kindness, and Compassion. And if we needed anything to make sure that it was uncertain times, then the terrible Bondi shootings on a few days ago certainly remind us it's uncertain times. But I think the most beautiful, one of the really encouraging things is that the hero of the went to act is a man called Ahmed El Ahmed, and the fact that he clearly just demonstrated that in uncertain times and in awful attacks like that, he to me demonstrated the practice of calm, kindness, and compassion by really putting himself forward to take the actions that he did. Even in the most terrible situations, there are people who come forward with what I would call, and I just have to get the four immeasurable attitudes, which is what we've been looking at. And the four immeasurable attitudes are loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And why we use those four attitudes is they are one of the most powerful and beautiful of Buddha's methods for transforming our minds. And listening to something about the four immeasurable attitudes during the week, the teacher from the Jamyang Centre, one of our sister centres in London, was saying, now remember that these teachings do go back to Buddha's times. Buddha did teach the four immeasurable attitudes. They're in one of the sutras that the Buddha taught. So we're talking about, 2,600 years. And before them, there are also attitudes which also come from the yogic tradition. So they have a very long tradition of being powerful, beautiful, and transformational practices. And they're practices for our happiness, which is, according to the wonderful Dalai Lama, whose pictures in the Gompa here, they are, happy, seeking happiness, finding happiness is one of the sort of purposes of our life. For peace of mind, our health, and beneficial and satisfying relationships. The four immeasurable attitudes of we use those to direct our minds, so directing our minds to practice these four attitudes for ourselves and for others. And so the first attitude we work with is equanimity, and that was in week one. And that was may all be free from attachment, aversion, and ignorance. And that's about having bias where we hold some people close, we hold others distant, and we don't care about the others. And we're to overcome that bias to hold all beings, to be in equanimity, to be not label people, and to have equanimity so that it's a calmness and a balance in how we approach our relationships with others. We have developed loving kindness, which is that may we all have the true causes of happiness. And finding what the true causes of happiness are is a process and a practice in itself. That we want to find the true causes of happiness, which come from inner states of mind. And we develop compassion that all be free from the true causes of suffering. And I guess compassion is, perhaps the immediate one, because we would define our sort of type of situation as one where, you know, we have causes of suffering. We haven't quite yet got to the state where we enjoy all the true causes of happiness, but that's what we're working on. And so with compassion, we want all to be free of the true causes of suffering, and with joy that we're never parted from the happiness that is without suffering. So we direct those minds with those four attitudes, and we come to understand that we direct our minds with these attitudes and we need to use meditation, but practice is in our lives. And one of the people who, as you can see, one of the really strong advocates for decades now is Alan Wallace, about the importance of the cultivation of the four immeasurables. And he calls them that they are the bedrock of our practice, because we have to realize that practice takes place in the context of our life, but our life is much more than formal, you know, meditation and spiritual practice. Our life involves children, spouses, parents, jobs, a whole range of relationships and situations. And how we spend our time becomes the fertile ground for our practice to take root and flourish. So we can spend time in meditation, but in terms of developing the ground, the fertile ground for our practice to flourish, it has to be in our life. It has to be when we leave the gompa here, when we get up from the chair or the cushion. And talking about our mind as fertile ground for practice is really important, because the four immeasurable attitudes are for fertile ground. But what Alan Wallace says, so it's this is continuing in this book of his, he's very clear that cultivating the four immeasurable attitudes need to start with a calm abiding meditation. He says that it's with the meditation, and that's the importance, we need to calm our mind, and I love this phrase, so that our mind is not pummeled to death with the afflictions. Pummeled to death, if you think about sometimes how our mind feels, you know, at the end of the day, you feel as though you're kind of a bit of punch drunk, because you've just had so much array of, you know, emotions and feelings and, you know, aversion and attachment and jealousy or pride. Hopefully in there some of the positive emotions too. But it's with meditation that we develop a practice of how we can become calmer in our mind, that we're not pummeled to death, you know, in our mind with the afflictions, that we can become more peaceful and calm from simply being present, you know, in the moment. Our mind needs to become fit for purpose, ready to develop all our qualities. And that's a great phrase, I think. Our mind needs to be fit for purpose, our fit for purpose for developing the attitudes, the four immeasurable attitudes. So Alan Wallace is very well known for the development of the whole of meditation and calm abiding, and calm abiding to a very, very deep level of awareness and calm that, you know, sort of we're at the very sort of superficial level of our mind, the gross level of mind. And the calm abiding takes you to a calmness that goes from the gross level to the kind of more with grace to more subtle level, and then to the very subtle level. So the fact, I think it's really interesting, the fact this amazing man, Alan Wallace, Lama Alan Wallace as he's called, is both really strong on the calm abiding, on meditation and calming and finding the depth of the mind, and the four immeasurable attitudes. So that's, I think that's a really important sort of combination that he advocates very strongly. And so becoming familiar with meditation is really important. And in Tibetan, the word meditation means familiarization, getting used to. In Pali, which was the original language of the Buddha, it means to cultivate, to development. And I love this, to bring into being. So that means to really bring into being in our lives the four immeasurable attitudes, and to then practice it in, in our life, the bedrock of our lives, as Ellen Wallace said. There are two main types of meditation: the calming, the concentration, stabilizing, and the analytical. And we'll be doing both types tonight. And we'll be doing now a calming or stabilizing meditation. And then we do an analytical meditation on the four attitudes. So we do stabilizing on the breath. And the Alan Wallace talks about what's, the object, for stabilizing meditation. And doing it on the breath is the one that he says that sort of just stay simple on the breath rather than elaborate, deity meditation and focusing on a deity. So with the meditation, we'll do just a simple one, and it will be looking, at our breath. And have you done meditations before? No. So, okay, Sophia. So if you'd like to, maybe getting a cushion under your feet, because one of the very important things with meditation is to have your spine really elongated and straight. And the purpose for that is to let the energy channel, and in Buddhism, the central channel is sort of like the big energy channel in our body, and to let that be sort of nice and straight in our body so that the energy can go up and down easily. And we rest our hands sort of maybe folded, sort of right hand over left hand like that in your lap. And to just to try and just ease the day, maybe just put your shoulders backwards and then bring them forwards and ease the tension, and then just let the shoulders fall. Maybe you can move your mouth around a little bit to kind of relax how the whole face feels. And open and close your eyes. And then decide whether you want your eyes open or just very lightly closed. Because it needs to be a position that supports your ability to be alert in the meditation as well as being comfortable. So just scan quickly from the shoulders, face, shoulders, down through the chest, the stomach, the hips, the thighs, calves, feet. Wiggle your toes and then breathe in with calm and breathe out any tension or tightness in your body. A few breaths like that, breathing in calmness, breathing out any tension. And with the breathing, let your attention be on the breath. Really feel every breath as it enters and leaves your body. You can notice its rhythm, explore its length or depth. Observing how your breathing does respond and change to feelings or emotions that might arise. Notice the way you are breathing, maybe through your mouth or through your nose or a little of both. There may be a tendency to want to change how you breathe, but just accept whatever is happening, noticing that moment by moment, your breathing may change. But with the breath, there is a constancy. Because breathing is the one thing we have to do in this moment. We can't store breath from the past, and we can't store it to use in the future. Breathing must be done in the present moment. So the breath reminds us that we are here and we are alive. And the breath is your anchor to awareness in this present moment. And for a few moments, be present and aware of breathing in and breathing out. And stabilize your attention on the breath. Breathing in and out. On the in breath, know you are breathing in. On the out breath, know you're breathing out. So you stabilize your attention on the breath. If distractions arise, then capture your attention. Just notice this happened. Be pleased that you noticed. It is normal for a mind to wander without the discipline of a calm, abiding mind. Then firmly return your attention to stabilize on following the breath as you breathe in and out. Be in harmony with each breath and know that in giving yourself this time to develop awareness, It is giving yourself time to stabilize on the breath and be in the present moment. And then in your own time, extend your attention out from the breath to all your body, to being in the room where you are, still keeping a steadiness in being present in the moment. And dedicate your efforts in practicing being mindful to developing a more stable mind that is not captured by distractions. So you develop a stronger ability to direct your mind where you want it to be beneficial for yourself and others. So open your eyes, move around as you need to. And reflect, did you feel a mind that was starting to get a bit calmer?
Always.
That always is. In. How did
calmer
you?
Calmer than last week.
Calmer than last week?
Yeah.
Well, I think the fact that it's calmer than last week, calmer than today, are really important to reflect that it is possible, isn't it? That you can, in fact, develop a mind, the stabilization of the mind, and then on the breath, which is a fantastic object because, as I said, you have to be in the present when you're stabilizing your attention on the breath. You know, you can't be in the past or the future because that's where the distractions are. So it's sort of really important to recognize that it was a bit calmer than today. It was calmer than last week. Gosh, you know, I can make progress in this. But it's practice is, you know, it does take practice. And that's the important thing. So even just a few minutes of 5 minutes, you know, Alan Wallace would say, you know, he's very keen on 24 minutes. All his meditations that I do are 24 minutes, and there's some scientific basis for 24 minutes. So I try and make my analytical meditations 24 minutes too. So now, in talking about meditation and the four immeasurable attitudes, we've used the terms like the four immeasurable attitudes. Mental factors, they're in our mind. Our mind, you know, an analogy for the mind is like, you know, the sky, and the mental factors, you know, go across the sky. But this is a new analogy for you to think of because Buddhism has all these wonderful analogies that hopefully one of them will really kind of grab you. And this is like fingers and the hand. Then it's saying that the mind and the mental factors arise together. Like when you have a hand, it's got its fingers, then you can't have one without the other. And the mind always is looking for, you know, pay attention to things. It's called the main consciousness. It's clear, knowing awareness. And knows the what of an object. So in this one, it knew the what that, oh, it's breath. So But then with mental factors, they start to apprehend the specific features of the object. So, in this case, was your breath sort of, was it stable? Stabilization, mindfulness is a very important mental factor. So it's the mental factor of mindfulness that helps. It's how or what kind of an object. So with trying to do the breath meditation, is the mind, the mental factors that are in your mind, are they distracted or are they mindful? Because the mental factors are what shapes your experience. So it's not the mind that shapes your experience. In the mind is the overall kind of big picture factor of being main consciousness, being knowing and aware. It's the mental factors that help shape your experience, that they're the mental factors you direct your mind with. And it shapes your experience whether you've just got a mind that is pummeled by distractions, pummeled by negativities, unpleasantness, or it could be that it's a mind that has compassion, kindness, joy in it. Then all of that is up to you, isn't it? It's not something that can be externally applied to your mind and what mental factors are in it. So that's the really important part of what Buddhism is about. And it's just said here, like fingers in a hand, they rise together to make a complete mental event. And that's important to understand. So whether the analogy of fingers in the hand sort of helps you to understand how the mind and the mental factors all shape a particular mental event. It's a bit hard to get your head around initially, but it's important to try and get an understanding because what we're saying here is having equanimity, loving kindness, compassion, and joy as the four immeasurable attitudes, as mental factors. They will direct your mind. So the experience of, what the hand and the fingers are like, will, whether they're very, kind of gnarly, broken sort of hand and fingers, or whether they're, very strong, positive hand and fingers, if you follow the analogy, is depending on the mental factors. And as we've been looking at in the course so far, we're very big on how neuroscience has said that familiarity brings change. You can transform your mind through the positive mental factors of, the four immeasurable attitudes. And there's this one neuroscientist who's a meditation teacher as well, Rick Hansen, said, and this is from a book of his in 2011, the details are complex, and that is an understatement. So, mind and mental factors is complex to get your head around. But one of the key messages from that is that you have to do the work. It's your mind and your mental factors. I can only talk to you and present how you use your mind and mental factors for your good and others' good. So it says the details are complex, but the key point is simple. How you use your mind changes your brain. And that's what they say about neural pathways. Have you heard of that? Yeah. So for better or worse, the brain takes the shape the mind rests upon. One meditation practice at a time is what he says. So, one meditation practice at a time, stabilizing on the breath, working on loving kindness, meditating on that, meditating awareness on compassion, meditating awareness on loving of joy and equanimity. We can transform our mind and our life with positive mental attitudes. That is virtually a given now. And one of the sort of people, the non-monk, is Richard Davidson, who has been working in this area since the Dalai Lama said to him, "Now, I want you scientists, you know, to work out sort of the relationship between neuroscience and the Buddhist philosophy and science," which with Buddhism has, you know, philosophy and science has been going on for, you know, 2,600 odd years. You know, neuroscience, you need to catch up. And so in 2017, he and another amazing fellow, Daniel Goldman, and Richard Davidson, this was back in 1987 or 88, when the Dalai Lama said, you know, "Come on, you folks, we want you to kind of get together between science and the neuroscience and meditate and Buddhism." And there were two, and they in this book, and if you look at Google AI, which is, you know, very useful in terms of asking what are the main points of altered traits, and please note it's traits, and they did that specifically because they're to say lasting change is possible. Consistent meditation can lead to profound, lasting changes in personality traits. And practice makes perfect. So achieving lasting changes requires smart, dedicated practice. And I guess that's sort of the reality of people who want a quick fix or don't want to do the work, you know, say, "Oh, well, you know, what's changing for me?" Well, you know, we have to do the work. You know, as the Buddha classically said, "I can show you the way, but you have to do the work." And that is, you know, there is no creator God in Buddhism. You know, so there's nothing that's going to, you know, zap you and sort of give you realization. So we have to do the work. But the key thing is, you know, Hansen said, back here, familiarity brings change, and we can transform our mind. And as this book says, lasting change is possible. Practice makes perfect. That, and we have to do the work. So if you want to Google AI Google, whatever it's called, and say what are the main findings of this, that'll be the two, you know, two of the ones they say. And so with the four immeasurable attitudes, the importance about the attitudes of, you know, compassion and kindness, loving kindness, joy and equanimity is that they work together as a team. We've been looking at them one by one for the last 4 weeks, but they work together, you know, as a team. And it was Alan Wallace who did the, you know, I mentioned him earlier with the book Boundless, you know, Boundless Heart, the cultivation of the four immeasurable attitudes. He's the one who believes calm abiding and the four immeasurable attitudes are, you know, what will get you across, I think, to enlightenment, to, you know, plus deeper, you know, other practices, but is very strong on those. And I listened to a teaching he gave, a weekend teaching, and at the end of the teaching on the Sunday evening, he said in quite an emotional voice, "The four immeasurable attitudes, it comes to my mind that they're like a team of horses, you know, pulling the whole Dharma vehicle along. And there you have compassion and loving kindness up the front, and behind them is joy and equanimity." And then he explained how you have compassion up the front and loving kindness, and he was saying that those attitudes look out for, you know, compassion looks out for equanimity, loving kindness looks out for joy. And then we have your back, you know, equanimity is specifically behind loving kindness and joy is specifically behind compassion. Why is it so? You're probably asking yourself. So how it works is equanimity is the attitude that all beings want to have happiness. Now, all beings, we need to not act with bias, attachment, and anger that holds some close and other distance, is what equanimity says. And so equanimity is behind loving kindness. And so when loving kindness starts to act with Well, I'm showing loving kindness to those I'm closest to. They're my focus. I've sort of lost my ability to continue to be looking and wishing that all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. And so equanimity says to loving kindness, no, remember that all beings want to be happy, that and have the causes of happy and happiness, and they're equally worthy of finding it. So drop your bias to the ones that you do like and look out for all beings again. So that's sort of what equanimity is, and looking after loving kindness. Then loving kindness, which is the attitude of may all beings have happiness and the true causes of happiness, that loving kindness looks around to joy. And joy is the one that may everyone have happiness and its causes, but sometimes joy just gets, no, look, I think, the causes of happiness are more around, sensory pleasures and all of that sort of thing. And loving kindness reminds joy that the genuine causes of happiness are from the mind, from positive mental attitudes. And stop chasing impermanent and hedonistic pleasures. Because the reality is, in our life, we're not perfect. We don't have these attitudes stable in our mind. We slip off the track and the rail and just think that, as Venerable Robina Curtin always said, that we think that happiness comes from chocolate cake and those sort of pleasures. So, and joy, being joyful, sometimes just forgets what the genuine causes of happiness are. And joy is about paying attention to all the good in the world. And so it's joy behind compassion. And compassion is the one who is looking out to encourage all beings to be free of suffering and the true causes of suffering. But if you're paying attention to suffering, I mean, sometimes it's just, too hard. Sometimes you just, think, I can't do this anymore. And it's joy then that says, sure, compassion, there is suffering in the world. But the important thing is to get a balance and pay attention to all the goodness of the world. And as I started the class, the classic is Ahmed El Ahmed, who at the massacre at Bondi tried to show the goodness, that's an example of goodness there is in the world, even in the most terrible situation. An example I used before, the people from the Red Cross, Médecins Sans Frontières, the Red Crescent, all the people who in the chaos of war are there to help others. So it's about paying attention even among the suffering, but it's also paying attention to the general goodness of people in the world, and to get a balance to not sort of concentrate just on suffering, because it does get hard. These attitudes are hard. If you really, developing these attitudes is hard, and that takes practice. And then if we go to compassion, and compassion says, yes, there is suffering in the world. So again, equanimity, you need to, make sure that you don't sort of drop the desire to not act with, not act with bias, that you drop the labeling of friend, enemy, stranger. And you can see how all the attitudes, the how we label people friends and enemies or strangers, just is how we can show where our loving kindness goes. It shows that our compassion can go to the people close to you and not be extended out. And that's where it's important to see where, like, joy and compassion is, very important. But it's, you know, getting, can you see that all these attitudes just hold bias in our mind if we don't develop them for all beings that have loving kindness for all, you know, compassion for all, joy for all and the goodness of others, and equanimity to hold no bias and be balanced and calm in our attitudes, you know, for others. But the important thing with these attitudes, can those who have been before, can who is the first person to extend these attitudes to yourself? Absolutely. Because who are we hardest on in our life? Who are we hardest on?
Ourselves.
Generally ourselves. You know, sometimes we're not, sometimes as, you know, we, you know, work with these attitudes, we're not. But basically it's so important to extend these attitudes to ourselves first. And that's what we've done in the analytical meditation on each of the attitudes, extended it to ourselves first. And as my daughter sort of not going through the easiest time in her life at the moment, and as a single mother, and her three-year-old daughter, and sleep, haven't made friends yet. So, you know, 3 years of sleep deprivation, which is sort of, yes, it's difficult. But, and she made the comment about, I was talking to her about these classes, and she made the comment of, it's like you can't drink from an empty vessel if you don't have the moisture in your cup to nourish yourself and then be able to extend that out to others. Then, you know, so you can't drink from an empty cup. I thought that was a good way of putting it. So sending yourself the moisture of these attitudes first, you then have the capacity to send it out to other people. Yes, I guess it's sort of taking the, you know, you can't, you know, you need to send out to others what you're saying. So you need to nourish yourself first and not give yourself a hard time, because if you just keep on giving yourself a hard time, you're never nourishing yourself to have a full cup to be able to, you know, then sort of offer it to others, if you use that example. So, and just putting you on the spot, Ian, having Ian, our treasures here, who's done this course twice before, do you find, you know, in your practice, of generally your practice, are you kinder to yourself?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, but also, perhaps more importantly, I'm kinder to other people.
Mm.
I'm less reactive to their expressions of greed or anger. You know, I find I'm a lot more tolerant now.
More tolerant, yeah. Yeah. But you have strengthened yourself first to be able to be more tolerant, and so that's probably with a bit more equanimity and compassion, yeah. So demonstrating that you can change, and that's the wonderful message, I think, between, you know, neuroscience and Buddhists, you know, meditation, that you can change in the attitudes. Ian was just saying after 10 years of meditation and practice that it does make a difference, and more tolerant, and when he was working, you know, now retired though. And we're moving on to the Four Immeasurables team meditation. So if you want to just sort of move around, get yourself a bit comfortable in the seat, I won't be going through too much detail for each, you know, given we're going to cover all four meditations. But first of all, we just get in a comfortable position, remembering alertness, though, is needed to keep your awareness on the meditation. So settle into the present moment and let go of thoughts of the past and future. And set a motivation for doing this meditation as a way to cultivate familiarity with the four immeasurable attitudes and to be able to practice them in your life for your own benefit and the benefit of others. Doing this meditation starts with the intention to direct your mind with these four positive mental attitudes and to develop familiarity with the attitudes so you can direct from your mind and these mental attitudes direct what you say and what you do in your life. And to gain an understanding of these attitudes, we will go through each one and consider the interrelationship they have with each other. So the first one is equanimity. This is the wish for all beings to be free of bias, attachment, and aversion, holding some close and others distant. And equanimity requires us to acknowledge the biases that we have. Our tendency to constantly label like, dislike, don't care. And with our relationships, that is the label of friend, enemy, stranger. And this labeling creates ups and downs in our emotional roller coaster of life. So by directing our mind with equanimity, we are looking to soften the ups and downs, to cultivate more balance, and to understand that just like us, everyone who we may label friend, enemy, or stranger, all beings, without exception, all want and seek happiness. All beings want to be free from suffering, just like you do. So rest your mind with understanding that all beings, including you, want happiness and be free of suffering. That comes from letting go of bias and opening up your heart with an attitude of equanimity, which lets go of labels and silently say to yourself, may I abide with balance and calm. May I have equanimity towards myself and all beings. May I abide with balance and calm. Balance and calm from letting go of bias and labeling. And may I have equanimity to myself and all beings. And now open up your heart and cultivate an awareness, an even-minded attitude, free from bias, that knows no labels, that has balance and calm, and send out to all other beings, regardless of personal feelings or whatever, send out to all beings from a mind of balance and calm to wish them to develop balance and calm in their minds, to wish them to have equanimity, free from bias, attachment and anger. And it is this attitude of equanimity that comes in to remind loving kindness not to fall under the influence of labels. That loving kindness not fall back to a bias that has a focus mainly on those that you hold close. And lets aversion and indifference come in. With equanimity's support, your loving kindness recognizes that all beings do want happiness and the true causes of happiness. And that all beings are worthy of finding this true happiness. And in considering the loving kindness, the attitude that wishes us all to have happiness and true causes, focus on yourself first. Bring to your mind what qualities or states of mind, positive mental states that you would bring, that would bring you true happiness. Let a vision of your own flourishing arise in your mind. And let this vision of your own flourishing and happiness arise, maybe as a warm warmth or energy or feeling at your heart, whatever works for you. And say, may I be well and happy. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I hold myself with love and kindness. May I have happiness. May I hold myself with love and kindness. And feel your attitude of loving kindness to yourself as a greater warmth or energy around your heart. And then bring to mind someone you are close to. Visualize them and wish for them. May you be well and happy. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you hold yourself with love and kindness. Wish to them, may you have true happiness. And as our attitude of loving kindness strengthens, can extend these wishes to people you know vaguely but no strong feeling for, or maybe complete strangers, whoever comes to your mind, and wish them. May you be well and happy. May you be peaceful and at ease. And hold yourself with loving kindness. And as we know that all beings want happiness, focus on a different person now, someone you might have a strained relationship with. It is a powerful step to overcome bias and prejudice by wishing this person, and say to this person, may you be well and happy. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you have true causes of happiness. And this wish can then be extended out to include all living beings. Imagine your loving kindness radiating outwards in all directions through all of space as you wish. May all sentient beings have happiness and the true causes of happiness. May all beings have happiness and the true causes of happiness. And as the attitude of loving kindness knows the true causes of happiness, it is loving kindness that reminds joy not to get caught up by the view that sensory pleasures are causes of happiness. Loving kindness tells joy not to follow impermanent pleasures as happiness, as they are not true causes of happiness. true causes lie in our mind and our positive mental attitudes, such as the attitude of immeasurable joy in how we delight in the happiness and virtues of ourself. Yes, we first reflect on moments of our own joy and success, on our own positive actions. Feel a happiness for our own positive actions and good fortune. The good fortune to have found the four immeasurable attitudes. And wish yourself, may I have joy and the true causes of happiness. And be free from suffering. May I have joy and the true causes of happiness and be free from suffering. And in your own mind, you can bring to your thoughts people who are close to you, neutral people, even difficult people. All of them will have some happiness and positive qualities to rejoice in. Wish them to have joy and good fortune. Then extend this attitude of joy to all beings, rejoicing in the happiness of all beings, from the simplest pleasures, their pleasure that they bring to the goodness of the world, their positive attitude and kindness they bring, and wish their joy to be lasting. Say, may all sentient beings never be separated from supreme joy that is beyond sorrow. And then it is this attitude of joy that says to compassion, yes, there is suffering in the world, but we all need to pay attention to all the goodness in the world with a joyfulness as a balance to the focus on suffering. Having joyfulness and this balance provides a strong base for the attitude of compassion, which is the wish for all beings to be free from suffering and its causes. We acknowledge our own suffering, the suffering of suffering, the suffering we get from how things change and are impermanent, and all pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction that arises from our habitual patterns of how we think, what we say, and what we do. Patterns that arise from afflictions in our own mind. Afflictions that can become and become an attitude of compassion to wish ourselves to be non-harming, to be respectful to our own selves, to be a friend to our soul. As you say, may I be free from suffering and its causes. May I hold myself in compassion. May I be free from suffering and its causes. May I hold myself in compassion. And with this attitude, bring to mind other people that you would wish to be free from suffering. Again, close people, neutral people, even difficult people, wishing for each to be free from their specific pain, suffering, and dissatisfaction. And wish, may you all be free from suffering and its causes. May you all hold yourself in compassion. And bring all beings into your awareness, visualizing that in the ocean of suffering in the world, you're sending as light or energy or warmth to all beings as you wish. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May you all hold yourselves in compassion. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all beings hold themselves in compassion. And we now come full circle with the attitude of compassion being the one to help the attitude of equanimity, for equanimity to keep going with its amazing effort and mental direction to be free of all bias. It's with the compassionate attitude that we guide our mind to remember that all beings are suffering here and now, that all beings want to be free of suffering. So with equanimity, we have the attitude that is free of bias, attachment, anger, indifference. A mind with mental attitudes that is the path forward, the path that directs our mind with all four immeasurable attitudes. And rest your mind in the vast open state of mind generated by these four attitudes. Allow your mind to be still and allow these four attitudes to be present in your mind. Here and now. Settle your mind with these four immeasurable attitudes. And when you are ready to conclude the meditation, gently return your attention to your body, the immediate environment, while carrying a feeling of connection through energy or warmth or light to the four immeasurable attitudes, and dedicate for this purpose. In your own time, gently. It's quite a big thing to do all four attitudes, I realize that. Hopefully it wasn't too overwhelming, or something did settle in your mind with the four. So I'll let you just sort of get your any thoughts together or any comments or questions you may have by just quickly making the point about practicing these attitudes with our three doors. So that is, can see the body, what we do, speech, what we say, and then having in our mind the four attitudes. So applying the mental states to ourselves first, then systematically extend to more circles of people, and extending these attitudes in what we say and do, and recognizing our interconnectedness. Just a few things each about what I do. And in the, so there are 10 actions which are called the sort of non-virtuous actions, 3 of body, 4 of speech and 3 of mind. And so they're the kind of basics. So if you look at what do I need to do with the four immeasurable attitudes, well, first of all, to abandon killing and harm of others, protect life with compassion, avoid stealing, protect, practice generosity, and abandon sexual misconduct. So in Buddhism, they'll say, well, what are the 3 non-virtues of body? It's killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. And if you do no other kind of actions, it's to abandon those actions, those 3, and to use then your positive mental states to be in your mind so you don't, you can protect life, you can practice generosity to others and respect others, and using the four immeasurable attitudes. Then what I say, how I communicate, and there are 4 of these, so it's to abandon lying, to abandon divisive speech, abandon harsh speech, and give up idle chatter. So abandon lying, tell the truth, have acceptance that you've lied, abandon divisive speech, so help others with, you know, reconcile disputes and not add to it, kindness, abandon harsh speech, speak with calm, be patient, forbearance. Walk away is also another thing you can do with your body, is very helpful with what you say. Walk in the other direction. Give up idle chatter and speak meaningfully, and don't, you know, gossip about other people's cruelly. And again, use the four immeasurable attitudes as, you know, antidotes to those 4 actions of what I say. Then what I think, mind and mental factors, it's abandon covetedness, you know, looking at what other people have and I want that, but be joyful for their situation, to abandon ill will and cultivate non-harm, abandon wrong views, so develop knowledge and logic, understand that and apply the 4 immeasurable attitudes. So a wrong view is to think that there are no consequences to what I, you know, say and do, that, you know, there's no karma. Not believing in cause and effect is the classic wrong view. And You know, I think we all experience in, you know, various ways. You know, what's the classic statement that's not at all Buddhist, that what comes around goes around, or what goes around comes around? You know, that sort of it. We do, you know, experience the consequences of our actions. So again, the 10 non-virtues, if there's nothing else you do, Buddhism says, abandon killing and harm, abandon stealing, abandon sexual misconduct, abandon lying, abandon divisive speech, abandon harsh speech, give up idle chatter, and abandon covetedness, abandon ill will, abandon wrong views about cause and effect, and to all of them apply the four immeasurable attitudes as a bit of armor, a bit of protection for your mind, in as a way to develop attitudes to do those actions. And some practice tips for you. So every day, set an intention at the start of each day. You know, it could be when you wake up, say to yourself, I'm going to try and really be kind or compassionate, or, you know, or say about the four immeasurable attitudes to yourself, but remember them. At least remember them when you wake up and say, I'm going to use them in my day. So set that sort of intention at the start of each day. Plan ahead, and that's about if you know you're going to go to, you know, with Christmas coming up, not everyone is, you know, like sort of, or not everything is going to be joyful and happy. In fact, I was passing someone in the street that was out in the on a bushwalk, and the woman was talking on her phone, and she said, yes, and then he told me that his aunt, his uncle slapped his aunt in the middle of the event. So, yeah, so plan ahead. So if you're going to be challenged, either avoid the challenge or be aware in your mind to say, I'm going to work with compassion. And so that's part of being, be alert and aware of, you know, where your mind's going, and try and grab that mind back from, you know, ignorance or ill will before it starts to sort of take over your mind. Remember that the four immeasurable attitudes is antidotes, and develop familiarity with them. So that's through meditation and just having a look. And just for Sophia, that there is, if you want to email info@languagetangpa.org.au, you can get this as a resource book of the course. And so that's a way to develop familiarity with the attitudes and all the neuroscience and all the other things. Take responsibility to do the work. Personal responsibility and doing the work yourself is the only way there's going to be any change. Review before bed, that, and particularly paying attention to positive results. And a positive result is you stop yourself saying something before you said it. It's sort of, you know, that's a really important result. Like, oh, I sort of shut my mouth before I said something I know that I'll regret. And set an aspiration to continue sort of in the things that, you know, you're practicing. The Jetsuma Tenzin Palmo is one of the sort of women who's amazing in the Buddhist sort of community. And so it's about, think about what is a day well lived for you with these attitudes. Because she says, a day is well lived if we can use it to bring some happiness and comfort to those around us. And if we carry out our work in the world with awareness and kindness rather than with confusion and gloom, which is particularly in these uncertain times, we can get sort of overcome by that. And she was, this was her 2020 Tibetan New Year message. And so if you remember, 2020 was COVID and all that was happening then. And I think that it's a message that is as relevant today as it was when she gave it. And so that's her with her arms around the nun in the front. And she was the one who wrote The Cave in the Snow. So it's pretty amazing. So that is, I think, quite an inspiring and, you know, sort of good advice. So what is the day world lived with the attitudes? Oh, yes, a self-analysis. Self-awareness. Well, I think it depends on how you think of yourself first. And if you think of yourself with kindness, compassion, joy and equanimity, then it's, I think it's about how you think of yourself, because it went back to the Buddha's time, and Jetsuma Tenzin Palmo has the most amazing series that the Meridian Trust did in England on the Four Immeasurable Attitudes. So it's a, you know, sort of 5 hours of video or 6 hours of video, and she reminded us that the Buddha said that you you must extend these attitudes for yourself. So I think my comment would be that it's about how you think of yourself, and if you're kind to yourself with the purpose of then supporting others. So it goes that, I mean, I think that's also important. It goes the other way, that thinking of yourself is unimportant, then you're not unimportant, because you have the capacity to have those four attitudes and really do, you know, be very strong in what you do, can do for others. So so it kind of works both ways. How you react to others in the face of, you know, onslaught of their suffering, as Tina said, is, I think, very important, and that it won't always happen like that. Some of them just will get angrier, but others can use it as a reflection for themselves. So but I think the comments all show how the complexity of how this all works, and the, you know, how it's sort of in our mind and how we work with the attitudes that, but it's important that you've both said the change, you know, that you can see the change. And that's something to celebrate and rejoice in. So,
no, I've really got a lot out of it, Carolyn, and I want to thank you very much for the whole program. It's just great. I always feel really good after it, and, and I'm filled with resolve to follow those tips you gave us. I think they're very helpful.